Next, as our final presenter, we want to bring up Bill Goodman. He's a leading attorney. This is another person who's really given of themselves tirelessly. He is a leading attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights. He has defended countless Guantanamo detainees. He has sued in the first case against George Bush's administration around extraordinary rendition, i.e. torture. He is a man who is involved in the lawsuits against this same regime for its wiretapping, the NSA spying. And he's here today to help us understand what just happened last week in Congress. What is this new law? What are its implications? Let's bring up Bill Goodman.
In order to really grasp what happened last week, we have to go back about 4 months. And 4 months ago, we had a real victory for constitutional democracy. The United States Supreme Court, 5-3, decided the case of Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. And that case, in a very skillful, professional way, the majority opinion written by Justice Stevens, in the most technical way, took George Bush and his rotten administration and pushed them all around the room. And in the end said three things. One, the President of the United States and the United States of America has to comply with international law, in this particular case, the Geneva Convention, Common Article 3, which means they can't torture people. Two, he said that the President of the United States, when he acts without congressional authority, acts inauthentically and unconstitutionally and violates the Constitution of the United States. And three, he also said, in a way that was very heartfelt to us at the Center for Constitutional Rights, that a statute that was passed before the opinion, which the government was trying to argue, made what was called the Detainee Treatment Act retroactive, so that all of our cases, all cases for anybody seeking basic constitutional decency in the form of habeas corpus, were out of court. He said it is not retroactive. These cases can go forward. That was a victory. Last week, that victory, to the everlasting shame of the United States Congress, was erased from the books. The new act, the Military Commission Act, does a number of things and goes even further than this administration had sought to go before. First of all, it creates an incredibly broad and sweeping definition of who is an illegal enemy combatant, an unlawful enemy combatant. Now, let me just say, the term unlawful enemy combatant is one that never really hit the books. It was never found in any statute or law of the United States, certainly is not in the Constitution. What we have traditionally understood in this country and around the world is the concept of a prisoner of war, someone with basic fundamental rights to be treated decently. This concept was really created and made exploited by the Bush administration in a way of to undermine the Geneva Convention. And really, the whole reason that those people are kept at Guantanamo, and not to mention Bagram, not to mention Morocco, not to mention black holes and ghost sites all over the world, the only reason is so that the requirements of the Geneva Convention that people cannot be tortured could be violated without any judicial intervention. That was their hope. Now they have defined illegal enemy combatant as anyone who engages in hostilities against the United States, anyone who provides material support to hostilities against the United States. And if you think about it, that could be anybody who dropped a dollar bill into a basket here tonight. Anybody Hold it, not done yet. Anybody who has been designated as an enemy combatant by a CSRT, a Combatant Status Review Tribunal, this is a creature that exists only at Guantanamo. But not only by a CSRT, by any similar commission that is appointed by the President of the United States, or anybody who is awaiting such designation. Again, in my humble opinion, that might be many of the people seated in this room tonight, for all we know. And it is not limited to people who are not citizens of the United States. The definition is anyone, citizen or non-citizen of the United States, can be labeled as an unlawful enemy combatant. Now, the statute goes on to do a number of horrible things, and all of the horrible things that it does relate only to non-citizens of the United States. So one might wonder why they use such broad language here, such inclusive language, language that would include people who are citizens of the United States as well as non-citizens. And all I can say is that given what we've seen happening in this country, this is merely the beginning. We are in a process. We have not concluded the process. And this part of the process, the definition of enemy combatant, is an extremely frightening and disturbing one. In addition, the statute says that there can be no habeas corpus relief for anybody held at Guantanamo, anybody who is an illegal enemy combatant, who is held at Guantanamo Bay, or anywhere else outside the world, any non-citizen. I'm here to tell you that the right of habeas corpus is a very basic and important right. It is the basis for what we understand democracy to be. It goes back to 1215, to the 13th century, but it goes back long before 1215, in fact. You know, they didn't invent the idea of habeas corpus all of a sudden in 1215. This was something that had been percolating through society, not only Western society, I might add, for centuries before that. And it is incorporated in the Constitution of the United States. And what it says is that no one can be held indefinitely, and if they are, they have a right to go in front of a magistrate and a judge, or a judge, and demand that they be, that the judge make a determination as to whether they're charged with a crime and whether there's any real evidence to hold them. And if there is not, the magistrate, the judge, can order the king, the police, the FBI, or anyone, or George W. Bush, the President of the United States, to let him go. That's what habeas corpus is. Without it, we are virtually slaves to a police state. And this was a massive suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. It has only happened four times that there's been a congressional suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, only four times in American history. And each time it has been narrow, and it has been limited, and it has been focused. And I'll tell you what they are. One was in the Confederacy during the Civil War in the middle of hostilities. Another was the uprising in the Reconstruction states of the Ku Klux Klan. Another, let's see, I made a note here. Another was 1902 during an insurrection in the Philippines, undoubtedly a just war on the part of the Philippine people, by the way. But the Philippines were so-called U.S. territory at that time. And in the Philippines, during that insurrection, and only during that insurrection, the writ was suspended. And finally, it was suspended for a brief period of time in Hawaii immediately after Pearl Harbor. And that's it. This is broad. This is sweeping. This is endless. This is not limited to a particular narrow geographical location or a very small period of time. This we have now to live with for many years and perhaps decades to come, and it is a shame and a scandal that the United States Congress enacted this statute. I just want to say a word about torture, because guess what? The new Military Commissions Act authorizes torture, you may be shocked to learn. What it says is, what the so-called, the phony McCain-Graham-Warner fight against the president in order to adhere to the Geneva Convention went down like a soggy, I don't know what. You know, and what we have ended up with is they cannot, they're grave, so-called grave breaches of the Geneva Convention are still punishable under the War Crimes Act. Before this statute was passed, all violations of the Geneva Convention were punishable under the War Crimes Act. Not that there was ever any prosecution under the War Crimes Act. Now it is only grave breaches. And who decides what is not a grave breach? There are a few things that are listed, such as torture, which means permanent physical damage, permanent psychological damage. But if there are waterboarding, for example, still perfectly okay, and the President of the United States can say it's okay. And it's interesting, during the debate of Military Crimes Act, on the floor of Congress, Senators Graham and Senator McCain stood up and said, well, this means that waterboarding is no longer, is a grave violation of the Geneva Convention, grave breach of the Geneva Convention. Uh-uh. The attorney of the Department of Justice went out of its way almost immediately to say, we don't read it that way. It's unclear. Waterboarding may be perfectly okay. And waterboarding, I don't care what they say. If I'm being waterboarded, I know I'm going to drown, or could well drown. Now, what we started out with 4 months ago was a ringing declaration of independence by the Supreme Court of the United States that the President of the United States can only go so far and no further. Congress has, to its everlasting discredit, lay down on its back, stuck its arms and legs up in the air, and whined and swallowed everything this president has fed it. The fight isn't over. We can still go to court. We can still try and win in court. We can try and win in the streets. We have to win, because if we lose these rights, we have lost democracy. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure you all read about the fact that the National Intelligence Evaluation is now finally being leaked. And guess what? The war in Iraq has really caused more terrorism than it has eliminated. Yeah, duh. So everybody knew that. Everybody knew it was going to happen. We all knew it. There were a million people out on the streets of this city on February the 15th, 2003, remember? And we knew it. That's what we were saying. And they heard us, and they knew it. The real question is, knowing that, why is it that this president went into Iraq wanting to encourage and create and build and enhance terrorism? Because these are people who are determined, bound and determined, to destroy our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and we will not let them do it. When you're as old as I am, and maybe there are other people in the room who are, you can remember a little bit about the McCarthy period. And I hope that you've all seen the movie about McCarthy called Good Night and Good Luck. It's a great movie. The message of that movie is, that tyranny thrives and democracy dies in the face of three things: silence, secrecy, and fear. I'm here to tell you, and you're here to tell me, we are not afraid. There are no more secrets, and we will speak out. Thank you.